Hi, it's Dave. So if you watch my channel, you might think that I suggest everyone to buy Tesla stock, but that's not my approach. I'm a firm believer that everyone ought to make their own financial and investment decisions, and that each person's situation is very different and oftentimes quite complex. So I'd rather just share my thoughts on how I look at things and leave investment decisions for each person to make on their own. In this video, I want to talk about the pros and cons of going all in on a stock, let's say like Tesla, versus diversifying. Because I think there's a lot of confusion out there. Again, everything I say on this channel is my stream of consciousness thoughts, and it's just what I'm thinking at this time. All right, so the question is, should I go all in or concentrate right in my investing versus should I play it safe and diversify? So this is an age-old dilemma and question in investing. So let's first ask what the ideal situation is. So I think in investing, the ideal situation is if you have a high recurring income, let's say your annual income is very high, and you are having, let's say, at least $100,000 of investable savings that you have every year annually, you can invest that and it gets replenished every year because of your high income. And usually, in order to get this 100,000, let's say, of investable income per year, it's probably a combo of having a very high income, at least $200,000 or $300,000 a year, plus low expenses, right? That allows you to save a substantial amount of money. The result is if you are in this lucky situation, which most people aren't, then you're not afraid to lose your investments because you have an endless supply of investable money. Because yeah, you lose your 100,000 and the next year you get another 100,000 to invest. Now, what's an even more ideal situation? So you add the high income to invest situation, plus you add young age. So if you're in your 20s or let's say in your even 30s, you can take more risks because you can recover from your bad investments. So let's say one or two or three investments go bad. You have a lot of time for things to play out and you can make a lot more investments with your high recurring income. So if you're listening to this right now and you don't have high income, then probably one of the key takeaways actually is if you can boost your income, unless you're making 50,000, but if you can boost it to 150,000 in a few to several years, this will likely actually be the best investment you can actually make. All right, so let's say you do have high income and let's say you are young, you're in this ideal situation. What are your choices investing? I think your first choice is you could go ahead and focus on building safe assets. For example, you can do some type of index fund investing. You could do a total stock market fund. You can do the S&P 500 fund. You can do the NASDAQ. There's many different types of index funds. Or you could invest in real estate in an area that you know, or you can invest in some type of passive income, which could be real estate or some other avenues. And the goal would be to cover your living expenses without needing to work. So let's say you have living expenses of $4,000 or $6,000. And if you can actually get some passive income from your investments that cover those living expenses, then yeah, you don't need to work. And you've kind of achieved kind of the goal of this first basket of safe assets. Now, another approach you could do is you could actually forego and not pursue safe assets as the first priority, and you can actually try to grow your assets very fast, and that could be the priority. So for example, you could own your own business and expand that business. You could actually just use your concentrated investing, the money that you're saving, let's say $100,000 or more per year, and put it into risky assets. Let's say not super high risky, but decently, you know, risky growth assets that will compound much faster than, let's say, a much safer, let's say, index fund. So there's a tension between actually safe and fast. And the tension is this, is that safe is lower risk and it's slower, but it'll take actually more capital, right, to build your assets. That's the safe approach. The fast approach is higher risk, it's faster growth potential, but it requires you to have the ability to recover from some of your mistakes so you can keep on investing. Now, the cool thing is if you actually have high income plus you're young, right? So if you have these two conditions, then you can actually pursue either the safe asset first approach or the fast asset first approach, or you could do both or a combo. So for example, if you pursue safe assets first, then you can, after you build your safe kind of basket, then you can pursue fast kind of assets or high growth assets if you want. Or you could flip it around and you can make it your first priority to pursue fast assets or growth assets, riskier assets first. And then if your investments do well, you can actually accomplish the safe kind of goals in route due to the sheer size, right, of your asset or portfolio. Or you could actually pursue a mix where you could do half in a safe basket and half in a fast growing basket, you could do like a 50-50 split. But you have a lot of options if you do have the combo of having high income plus being young in age. All right, let's look at a couple of these tracks more in detail. So track number one is pursuing the safe route first. So if you are, let's say, more risk adverse by nature and goals, then you can pursue kind of a route where you try to grow safe assets first. So what does this mean? This means, you know, possibly building a portfolio of real estate or of index fund assets. You could use, for example, real estate income to cover your living expenses, or you could actually just focus on stocks. Let's say if you have index funds, the dividends can cover a portion of your living expenses. Consider a 3-4% rule. Let's say if you have $1 million of stocks, let's say, you know, 1-2% could be dividends, and another 2-4% actually you could withdraw over time to cover your living expenses, but it should appreciate according to at least historic trends. So one kind of general rough equation is if you have about $1 million in assets, whether it's in real estate or index funds, it should cover roughly about $3,000 a month of living expenses. Of course, this changes according to the macro environment, according to the country you live in, different situations. Now, the second point is after you have enough, let's say, to cover your living expenses, then you can pursue more of the fast route. So you can pursue riskier investments at that time. You can go more concentrated. You can do private equity, right? Invest in companies that haven't even gone IPO. If you're an accredited investor, you can invest in startups, or you can make big bets, right, in huge growing markets with the potential market leader. And also, you can pair it with doing intense due diligence and research, so you can actually get really good at making kind of these investments more on a fast track. All right, so let's look at track number two. Now, this is pursuing fast growth investments first as a priority. So this is the opposite. So if you are more risk prone, then yeah, you could pursue risk first. And what does this mean? And I'm still talking about kind of the person, the ideal situation with high income and young age. So you could use due diligence and research to get in early on trends and companies. You build conviction and make appropriately sized bets. I encourage you to study the Kelly criterion, which helps kind of make the right size bets. It's not, let's say, the holy grail or the absolute rule to follow, but it just gives you an idea of different ideas, how to size your bets. And then you could build expertise and you can have opportunity to do multiple bets over time. Now, if you're successful, you can accomplish all of kind of the safe goals along the way because you just put aside, let's say, $1 million at a time, hypothetically, into safer assets per $3,000 per month of living expenses that you need. So for example, if you're growing your assets very fast, you could slowly just kind of move over some assets into a safe basket of index funds, of real estate or real estate investment trusts, et cetera, that can give some income and can cover kind of, you know, your living expenses. All right, let's look at a track three now. So track three is what if you pursue a safe route and a fast route together? Now, this is possible, again, if you have high income and you're young. So you could pursue safe assets with 50% of your income. So you go into real estate or index funds, more of that route, and you can pursue fast investments with the rest of your 50% of your savings and income, where you go into growth assets, you're more concentrated, and you do more higher risk. All right, so what if you're not in this ideal situation? Let's kind of investigate this. So first off, if you do have high income, right, and you're young, the point I'm making is that you can pursue almost any investing approach, whether it's slow or fast or combo, and it could make sense, right? But the problem is if you don't have that kind of holy grail of being high income and young, what if you're just low to moderate income? Then you don't have as much capital to invest, and it makes it much harder to compound that capital over time. And then there's a problem if you're not young and you're older. And if you're nearing retirement, then if you take on too high risk, then it could be detrimental because you could lose actually assets that you really need, right, in your older age. So I think a lot of people are actually put in a situation where they're kind of forced into diversification. Okay, what do I mean by this? So if you have low to moderate income, and then let's say you're older, you could be forced into kind of just a safe asset approach because it would be difficult to recover from investment losses from riskier investments. But you might be tempted by high growth investments because you might not have enough to retire. And so that could be appealing. So this is all assuming, of course, that let's say you don't have enough assets to perpetually, you know, cover your living expenses, and you have low to moderate income and you're older. So Warren Buffett, a couple of years ago, he had this quote. I remember it from an interview he was giving. He said, "Reaching for yield is really stupid. stupid, but it is very human. People say, well, I saved all my life and I can only get 1%. What do? You learn to live on 1%, unfortunately. You don't go out and listen to some salesman come and tell you, I've got some magic way to get you 5%. If you need to get 3%, you can only get 1%. The answer is you should always adapt your consumption to your income. And I think Warren Buffett here is kind of giving a dose of reality where it's like, yeah, if you're older and you don't have enough assets, really, to live comfortably in retirement, your really basic choice right now would be to lower your consumption. Because if you just take on additional risk, trying to chase yield or higher growth investment opportunities, that's adding on a risk that you can't afford to take in your older age. All right, so there is a place where, yeah, you can definitely take on too much risk. So first, you don't wanna take on more risk than you can handle. And second, it's unfortunate, but the less assets that you have and the older you are, it turns out the less risk you could take, because ultimately you need to avoid the catastrophic, because you just don't have enough time to recover from potential losses in case you do things that are higher risk. All right, but on the flip side now, I think there are certain circumstances and situations where people take on too little risk. So what are those situations? I think if you have high income, let's say you're young and you have high assets, I think the temptation is that people can try to go into preservation mode, right? They get kind of scared with large numbers that, oh my gosh, my portfolio is at a certain point. And even though there's an opportunity where they can keep compounding their investments, oftentimes people get scared and they get tempted to call it quits, and they might trade their portfolio and their whole investments for more of a safe kind of guaranteed return. And there are a ton of financial products out there that will charge you a fee and gladly take all of your money, right, to give you some type of guaranteed form of income for the rest of your life. And I think actually there's another situation or circumstance where people can take on too little risk. And that's if you're older, but you have actually a lot of assets, meaning, for example, you have enough assets to cover all of your living expenses in perpetuity. Then I think in this situation, you can actually afford to take on some risk, meaning you could split your assets into a safe and kind of fast basket and have enough in your safe basket to take care of all of your living expenses, let's say until you die. But then you can put some in your fast basket where you can actually look for compounding opportunities. And I think that's a reasonable thing to do. All right, so what are some tips in terms of how to keep compounding your money, not get into just a preservation mode out of fear? I think there are a few hacks that I've learned along the way. The first is having low living expenses. So if you are happy with low living expenses, it could be kind of a superpower because you're less scared of your investments dropping because it doesn't affect your living standard. And you don't need to keep upping your lifestyle, which adds this ongoing expectation that your investments have to return a certain amount or have to be there at a certain type of asset level. All right, the second hack to help keep compounding is if you have high giving ambition. So if you wanna give a lot of kind of your assets away to, let's say, help people, or you had ambitious goals for that, then you can kind of want to keep compounding. And at a certain point, for example, some people investing for themselves or just to keep up their lifestyle isn't motivating after a certain point because you have enough. So basically you need some type of reason to keep compounding at a high rate rather than just trading it in for a guaranteed yield or income, which can be actually very tempting and appealing. All right, the third hack to keep compounding is to understand the power of compounding. And I really think that most people don't really grasp the essence and the power of true compounding. So for example, if you can grow your assets at 15% a year, that means you'll double your assets every 5 years. So over a 30-year period, that equals to about 6 doublings. So you can take $1 million and take it to $64 million in 30 years. So how does that work? You take 1 million, that's the first, you start out. So after 5 years, you go up to 2 million, 10 years, 4, 8, 16, 32, and then 64 after this. This is basically 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So that's 6 doublings, right? That you could do in 30 years at a 15% year, and you're at $64 million, right? That's amazing, 1 to 64. Now let's compare it to a different scenario. Let's say you're growing your assets at 5% a year. And if you do that, you'll be doubling your assets every 14 years. So roughly, let's say over 30 years, that's about 2 doublings. So you go from 1 to 2 to 4. So you're going from just $1 to $4 million in 30 years, right? That's the difference between growing your money at a 5% rate versus growing your money at a 30% rate. And I think if you understand kind of the power of this compounding, right, and just having kind of a high growth rate over time, and you pair this together with kind of the power of what you can do with resources, right, the responsibility actually to do good with it, then actually it could be an extreme motivating factor actually to keep compounding your money over time. All right, so here is a personal example. Now, this is not by any means saying that you should follow my example or this example is right. There's nothing of that. It's just purely just a sample of what I did. And yeah, there are pros and cons to the approach, but here's kind of my story. So I started out in 2008 by starting a business. The iPhone had come out the year previously, and my wife and I, we saw some opportunity to start a software company doing apps. We needed to solve an income problem, also a savings problem, because we didn't have enough really to invest heavily. And part of the issue was in my 20s, all the way into almost my mid-30s, actually, I was just focused on nonprofit work, and I saved very little money. All my attention was just kind of on helping others. And it wasn't until I was doing nonprofit work that I realized I had a lack of resources or access to resources that were really hampering what I could do. So that's when I wanted to switch attention into business and investing to try to grow some resources. Now, a few other things helped with this. First off, we had low expenses. We had high ambitions because we kind of knew what we wanted to do with the resources as they grew. And I understood the power of compounding. Like, this was pretty much the foundation and the very thing I understood about investing, and I wanted to tap into that. I was looking for high compounding investment. Lastly, we used actually a combo of kind of a safe and a fast approach to investing. So we took some of our business income and savings, we put it into real estate, and that helped a lot to kind of first, bring down the cost for our living expenses because we had a super low mortgage, but also to provide some passive income through some rental properties. And we also had our business that we had invested in that was providing some income as well. So all of this kind of provided more of a safe basket. And it allowed us to use the rest of our assets and savings to be used for fast, high growth investing. And eventually all of that went into Tesla stock. In 2012 or so, the composition looked like we had a safe basket, let's say of real estate, our business, et cetera. By 2013, we pretty much had our entire stock portfolio, invested in Tesla at that time. Now, moving forward, I think over time, the biggest challenge has been to focus on kind of the goal of continuing to compound. Now, this is, of course, different for each person, but because of the high ambition that my wife and I have to grow assets, to do something good for with those assets, we wanted to not just cash out, and just to guarantee our own kind of security and income for the ongoing future and our kids and their kids, et cetera. Rather, we wanted to see where this could go and how far we could, compound and kind of with a greater sense of responsibility, take compounding to as far as we could. So my situation, I kind of look at it like this. So we started out, my wife and I, kind of investing in this combo of safe and fast. And these safe assets actually, we're able to provide a lot of security, some passive income, and a lot of kind of just safety. So it was a safe basket that really, I think, helped us in a lot of ways to kind of be able to kind of take on a higher risk. And so this fast basket we put into Tesla. Now, what happened over time was we just, didn't really pull much of our Tesla stock over time. We still have the vast majority of our Tesla shares that we bought in 2012 and 2013. And this just kind of grew over time more and more, right? And in terms of our safe assets, I don't think we've added on that much. These safe assets still are providing the similar function, of providing kind of the stability, kind of some passive income, covering living expenses, et cetera. It's just that this basket has grown, let's say, over 100 times, and now it completely outweighs, and overshadows the safe basket. Now, does this mean that I'm not diversified and that I'm concentrated? Well, yeah, I guess so, because, percentage-wise, I'm definitely concentrated. But when you look at kind of just the thing of covering living expenses, I feel like, we do have a basket of relatively, I want to say diversified, but safe investments that provide passive income that we don't even need per se this other basket of fast assets, and we'll still be okay, in terms of our financial situation. So that's why when I talk about, let's say, being concentrated or being diversified, I don't think it's a simple either or. And it's not something that I could personally suggest someone to be or to do is, you need to be only diversified or you need to be only concentrated. I think there's a whole myriad, of different situations and circumstances out there, that's individualized. And that's the basically the personal nature of finances and investing. I think it's very highly personalized. personal. Each person's situation is vastly different. Everyone has different goals and personalities, different responsibilities, different ages, different skill sets. I think each person should make their own decisions and take their own responsibilities. There could be a time that makes sense to diversify, right? There could be a time that makes sense to concentrate into some faster growing assets. But ultimately, I think, it's a sacred personal decision, right? There are a ton of people out there who tell people what to do and what to buy and what not to buy and all this stuff. But I think ultimately, it's the individual, it's yourself that is going to bear the consequences. Because of that, right, ultimately you need to own, right, decisions that you make with your finances and investing. And I think there is a lot of bad advice out there regarding diversification versus concentration. Now, one advice is everyone should diversify, right? And I think this is biased to preservation, which is appropriate for some people, but for not all. And then there's this kind of advice, some people say everyone should concentrate if they have conviction. But yeah, I think even with conviction, it might not be appropriate to concentrate, right? If you don't have kind of that situation that allows you to take some risk or high risk. And then another type of advice people give is like, oh, you should invest in X, Y, or Z, or do this right with your money. And I think it's better probably to pick your own tools in the toolbox according to your own goals and your personal situation. Meaning, right, there is no one size fits all, right, for people with investing. It really depends on, right, your income, your situation, your age, your risk profile, your ambitions and goals, all sorts of things like that. Anyways, I hope this video has given kind of some food for thought on how to approach concentration versus diversification. If it has, go ahead, like, and subscribe. All my videos can also be found as an audio podcast as well. Just search for Dave Lee on investing in your favorite podcast player. I'm also on Twitter at HeyDave7. All right, I'll see you guys in my next video. Thanks.